Good morning, be seated, please. The first case in our calendar is 98-556, State of Ohio, Trail Paul Baker versus the Industrial Commission of Ohio, Mr. Jaffe.
This is the case under 4123.56. I'll refer to the statute as 0.56. And the other possible two statutory sections I've mentioned are also in the same chapter. We refer to them that way. Main prevention motion for reconsideration is the position of the appellant that the court here had unwittingly done a grave injustice to the injured worker. In the case of Mr. Baker was working at the time that he became disabled. As a result of your decision, a decision that says, if the individual quits his former position of employment, he is thereafter barred from time receiving temporary total, or he thereafter forfeits any right to receive temporary total, you have created this situation. One, Mr. Baker, if he had stayed with this employer, could not take a promotion. If he took a promotion, gone. No more temporary total. If he again became temporarily totally disabled. Mr. Baker, if he left the employer where he was injured, as he did in this instance, to take what he considered a better job, in this case a better job because he was a trained truck mechanic, and he had an opportunity to again be a trained truck mechanic instead of a general laborer. But when he leaves to take this better job, you have said to him, you have forfeited any right thereafter to receive temporary total compensation. And I should say that there's no argument in this case. Mr. Baker was temporarily totally disabled. The employer who examined Mr. Baker or the employer said that Baker was temporarily totally disabled and needed surgery.
Mr. Jaffe, this all seems really so elementary. We've had this law for so long about the responsibility of the employer where the injury occurred. I'm wondering how we missed it the first time through. When I went back and tried to look at the briefs, it was a distinction between continued employment and abandonment made in those first briefs.
I think what happened, frankly, in terms of abandonment is that the court somehow construed abandonment of the position as being a test, when in fact, if there was a test, as stated under Jones and Olson, the test would have been abandonment of the work marketplace. So that in Jones and Olson, you were saying, the Court of Appeals, I'm sorry, was saying that this person having permanently removed himself from the workforce, not from the job, but from the workforce, therefore was precluded from receiving temporary total compensation.
Yeah, and those cases were like retirement or incarceration, that
right.
Sort of thing. But I didn't see that distinction, I didn't see that this was not a non-abandonment case in the first case. In other words, this is a case where there was continued employment with another employer. He didn't abandon the...
He did not abandon the workforce, that is correct.
Was that a clear distinction made for us in the first set of briefs? And if not, why not? Okay.
I thought it was. I thought it was a clear distinction in the original brief. And clearly we have tried to explain it that way. And we've said to you, in effect, this is a case of first impression because you have never decided a case that says where the individual is a working individual. And quits that job, that individual is thereafter precluded from receiving temporary total compensation.
He, Mr. Chavez, he, at the second employer, he assumed a job, am I correct, he assumed a job that was similar or identical or similar to the one he had with the first employer, is that right?
No. The job he had as the first employer was as a general laborer. The job he got with the second employer was as a truck mechanic. He was a trained truck mechanic. And so he left the job. To give you an idea further of what an injustice you have done here with this situation, you created a situation where the employer can create a hostile environment for this individual, hoping to encourage the individual to leave, because if the individual leaves, you have said he's not eligible for temporary total compensation because he left former place of employment. And then you also have said, if in fact the employer fires the guy, then he's no longer eligible. And again, what you have is a working individual. What you have is an individual who is no less suffering an inability to work as if he had stayed on the same job, no less suffering a loss as if he had stayed on the same job, and nevertheless, you have said, unlike what you said in Bing, that this person is no less deserving of temporary total compensation, you have said automatically this individual is precluded from receiving temporary total compensation.
Now, if Mr. Jaffe, though, in the event that an employer would discharge someone based on their eligibility for workers' comp, we know that they have a cause of action in the chapter for that.
No employer is going to be so obvious as to discharge the individual on that basis.
Okay. But if they did, if an employee, you're suggesting that an employee can't prove it, but yet there is a cause of action, and it should
be
provable.
There is a cause of action.
Yeah.
But there is here an entitlement to temporary total compensation. What you've done is to adopt a doctrine or a rule, whatever you want to call it, that is non-statutory. There is not a word in point 56 that says anything along the line of what you have done. There is nothing in point 56 that ties this individual or chains this individual to the job of injury. Not a word. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the words in point 56, I think you'd be inclined to see the exact opposite. For example, if you start with 56A, you see that except as provided, I think it's in division D, and you then see a formula to calculate how much shall be paid to the individual so long as he is temporarily totally disabled. That's number one.
What's the purpose? I guess I'm interested. I think the whole thing maybe turns on what's the purpose for temporary total disability.
The purpose of temporary total disability is to provide a measure of compensation to an individual who has become temporarily totally disabled.
During the time, in theory, during the time where a claimant is recovering from the industrial injury.
That's correct.
And therefore, so that they can return to work. And then there's other compensation. There's wage loss. You know, the chapter provides for wage loss compensation or permanent partial or ultimately permanent total. But temporary total has a real limited use, doesn't it?
Temporary total is there for the purpose of paying the individual compensation while they are totally disabled temporarily.
As a result of their injury.
Yes.
And so the theory behind our decision, I guess, was if they were disabled, I mean, that they weren't working on that job because they decided for their good reason to take another better job, then it is not the injury that triggers.
That's wrong.
Okay, that's where we're wrong.
There's nothing in the statute that ties it to that job. There's nothing in the statute that says, you leave this job, you forfeit temporary total disability. As a matter of fact, if you look at the statute a little further, you see that there is a policy expressed, I think, that encourages people to take other jobs. For example, you look further and you see the language that says if the employee is offered a job by this employer or some other employer within his physical capacity, then in fact if he doesn't take it, he's cut off the temporary total. If he does take it, on the other hand, as you put it, and then some weeks down the road is able physically, let's say, to go back to his original job, you've cut off through Baker. And that's not what the statute provides. And that essentially is the force of our argument. I think one of the things perhaps the court has failed to realize is how transient the work population is today. And we provided you with some statistics from the Bureau of Labor Services spelling that out. Amazingly, 25% of the working population in 1998 had worked for that employer 1 year or less. The median employment longevity was 3.6 years. So you've got a transient population. People are trying to better themselves. People are working to earn a living, to support themselves and their family. They have an opportunity for a better job. In all likelihood, they will take that job. If something further than the oaths, but then from a physical standpoint, you have precluded their receiving temporary total compensation.
Mr. Chaffee, did Mr. Baker seek from Truck Stops of America temporary total?
No, because nothing happened to Truck Stops of America that would have caused an injury, that would have entitled him to seek temporary total compensation.
I understand all that. I just asked the question, did he seek temporary total from Truck Stops of America?
No.
Okay. Is there any circumstance that you can think of that Truck Stops of America should be responsible for his temporary total arising out of this injury?
No, and the statute makes no such provision.
So that the outcome would be, it would not be a covered injury at all?
I'm sorry?
The outcome would be, it would not be a covered injury at all if Truck Stops of America isn't liable and the original employer wouldn't be liable.
That's correct. You, in effect, have done what you did in this case, relegated that person to welfare.
All right, you beat us up enough. Do you want to get off that? We've done this, we've done that. We're here for a different reason, aren't we?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I reserve the remainder of my time. We'll talk some more, I'm sure.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. Mr. Howenstein.
Really sad.
Good. Thank you.
McGraw was correctly held to voluntary departure in order to perform other work for reasons unrelated to the industrial injury constitutes abandonment and terminating CTD. We also have to overrule McGraw finding the target. Fourth, and this is something I really wanted to address, Mr. Gaffney suggested that this individual is not on walk if he's not in temporary total disability, that he's put on welfare rolls, that he's out of luck. That's not the case. The legislature has expressly considered employees may leave their jobs for other employment, and they provide an adequate alternative remedy to temporary total disability compensation, which is found under 56A, that being non-working wage loss compensation under 56B. And I'll come back and address that some more. Fifth, in order for this court to find abuse of discretion, the commission must... Yes?
If you're fined for that, is the amount the same?
Yeah, well, the first 12 weeks, the amount is based on 2/3 of the weekly wage. In Mr. Baker's case, he would have fully compensated under non-working wage loss because he already had an initial period of temporary total disability. He would have paid for the full amount of his 6.5 months of disability at 2/3 of an average weekly wage, exactly the same as if he had a temporary total disability.
What is the difference between the two?
Wage loss compensation has a 200-week time restriction. I think it's interesting to point out that temporary total disability used to have a 200-week time restriction as well.
Does the original employer
pay taxes? Yes, I do.
I think I understand your argument, and I want to be sure, because it seems to me that we're missing some piece here, and I'm not sure what it is, Counselor. If I work for a company that you represent, and I'm temporary total, doctor releases me to go back to my position of employment, I go back and work for 3 months and go someplace else, and my original injury kicks up again while I'm working at the new place, what would your position be on the responsibility of you as the employer for my injury, my temporary total?
The employee would be eligible to file for non-working wage loss compensation under the 56B. But
you'd also be entitled to have the temporary total, would you not? Now, and see, that's the distinction I want to make. Voluntary abandonment, I think you're equating with discharge and incarceration. Not even necessarily discharge, but incarceration or retirement. Those are what our previous cases have held, and the Jones and Laughlin case in the Court of Appeals. I see a difference, and that's why I'm giving you a shot at me with regard to this. I see a difference between changing jobs. You want to call it abandonment. I'm not abandoning the employer I'm working for. I'm just going to some other employer.
Well, in the past, this court has defined voluntary abandonment as a leaving of the former position of employment for reasons unrelated.
So if I run in my jurisdiction for the Court of Appeals and get elected and leave here, I've abandoned the Supreme Court job.
That's correct. And McGraw, I think it's an interesting decision. The Court of Appeals stated that voluntary abandonment does not preclude all compensation related to only temporary total disability. The Court expressly stated that permanent partial and permanent total continue to be available. McGraw didn't mention wage loss, but the industrial injury of McGraw occurred in 1976 prior to the enactment of the wage loss statute. In 56B, the statute expressly states that you can leave work for other jobs and still be entitled to wage loss. That's not in A because that wasn't contemplated. Your eligibility terminates under A because you left your former position of employment. But you do have an adequate remedy under B that the legislature specifically enacted for these circumstances. The foregoing reasons compel the Industrial Commission of Ohio respectfully request that the court's unanimous decision in this case be affirmed and the request is granted.
Thank you, Mr. Hobstein. Mr. Miller.
You said you're abandoned. I
think it's important, Justice Douglas, to realize that the Industrial Commission made a factual finding in this case that there was a voluntary abandonment by the plaintiff. And that factual finding is based upon evidence that's in the record and is supported by the record. Based upon the factual finding that there's been a voluntary abandonment, the application of the longstanding case law would support the denial and the conclusion of temporary total compensation and lead Mr. Baker then to applying for wage loss compensation under 56B. But he has failed in his claim to ever file for that.
Counsel, do you agree that he would get the same amount under B as he would under temporary?
Absolutely.
And that the first employer would be responsible for the payment of that?
Absolutely, just like the first employer would continue to be responsible for medical benefits and coverage of surgical bills.
And you indicated he never made an application for B?
He's never even requested compensation. And the alternative forms of compensation is not a new concept for you to consider in this preclusion situation. That was also discussed in the McGraw case. At that time, wage loss, the alternative didn't exist, but the court pointed to a permanent partial and permanent total as other alternative forms of compensation when temporary total would be precluded by the voluntary abandonment. The voluntary abandonment doctrine hasn't been limited by this court to a retirement type issue or to an incarceration type issue. Specifically two of the cases you've decided, McGraw being one, another 7-0 per curiam decision, the claimant had gone back to subsequent jobs and had worked subsequent jobs before he became temporarily and totally disabled. The court nonetheless held that temporary total compensation was precluded. In the Smith versus Superior Brand Meats, again, an employee went to a different job, worked at a different job, later became disabled. The court found that the temporary total compensation was precluded under the voluntary abandonment doctrine. Even within the last few months, this court, in another 7-0 per curiam decision, the Cobb versus Industrial Commission case, based upon a violation of work rules for a drug test, a positive drug test, the employee was precluded from temporary total compensation once again. It's been applied across the board when there's a voluntary abandonment. In this case, the Industrial Commission made a factual finding that there was a voluntary abandonment. Based upon that factual finding, there are another four cases, all again, 7-0 per curiam decision.
Was the drug test case a voluntary? I forgot to grab the fact. Is that a voluntary abandonment, or does the employer require the person to abandon the job?
The court has held that an employee voluntarily intends the normal consequences of his acts, like the Ashcraft case.
The employee clearly could not go back to that employer. Here, this employee could. I guess my question is, this is a fairly old law, and I think I'm right, and that things have changed. I mean, times have changed, and people do move around. Employees move around. Mr. Jaffe gives us some information that's pretty well known that employer-employee loyalty is a thing of the past for many. What, assuming that the statute does not prevent us from doing it,
why should we not interpret the statute as giving, well, how would we violate the purpose of the statute by adopting the view expressed by Mr. Jaffe?
Well, 56A contains the language former physician of employment.
Isn't that a medical question? The medical doctor says, you may return, you are now healed enough that you may, recovered enough that you may return to your former position of employment, or you may not. And the temporary toll continues or doesn't continue. Isn't that?
Well, there's a medical issue involved, but the former position of employment has been defined by this court to be the specific job being worked by the employee at the time, and that was an employee-based decision, because the problem for that decision was that employers were saying, well, you can go back to sort of the same job, but not quite so much standing or not quite so much lifting, but some of the same tasks, and therefore temporary total compensation should be terminated. This court held that no, you need to be able to go back to that specific job, and that was the holding in Ramirez. It was an employee-based decision to provide them with greater benefits. So is there a medical aspect of it? Certainly there's a medical aspect. If we were leaving this person without any benefits, then there might be the equitable arguments that Mr. Jaffe's making. But he has wage loss. That fills the gap. The legislature created wage loss in 1986 to fill this gap, to solve this problem. There's not an absence of benefits available. There's not an absence of compensation available. It's been filled by the legislature, and I believe we should defer to the legislature on that issue.
So when he becomes temporarily total with the second employer, he should apply for wage loss.
And they do regularly.
Against whom?
Against the first employer under the first claim.
All right, if it all comes out the same in the end, what's the difference?
The legislature has decided it's two different issues and it should be handled differently. My time is up, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Jaffe, you've saved 5 minutes
sense.
Of your time.
We'll pay it. We'll pay it if we call it extra. Yes.
I'm going to try first, Justice Cook, and Justice Douglas, to explain the difference between wage loss and temporary total, because it has not been told to you correctly. And I assume that's an unwitting mistake on the part of the appellees. Wage loss. This man is not eligible for wage loss, period. Why is he not eligible for wage loss? No way he'll get it. Because he is not able to work in that period of time that he is temporarily totally disabled. The requirement for wage loss is that you are out there looking for work. If you take a look at the Ohio Administrative Code, I think it's section 41.5, not cited by either side, you will find the administrative rules for wage loss. You've got to be out looking for work and looking for work in good faith. The idea of temporary total is this person is not able to work. And I think that's something that needs to be understood. There is no other workers' compensation benefit, none, that is available to this person in the period of time that he is temporarily, totally disabled.
And aren't the amounts different, too, between wage loss and temporary total?
The amounts for most people would probably work out at about the same. It's a little different calculation, but it would work out at about the same. The statute today would permit 200 weeks of temporary total before an examination to determine temporary total should be terminated.
Yeah.
It would permit 200 weeks of wage loss. But these two are and always have been treated as totally separate items.
Counsel, you said that the administrative rules require that the person was, that the statute B, section B, required the person to be.
I believe that it does. And that's the way I read the statute, and I would understand the rule to be nothing more in that respect than an amplification of the statute.
So this
man is not eligible for wage loss.
So is your position if Mr. Baker had applied for non-working wage loss to be denied?
It would have been denied. It would have lapsed.
As a matter of fact, we've decided a number of cases that hold against the claimant on the basis that they haven't submitted that they were out actively seeking employment,
sure,
during the period of time of wage loss.
Yes, your court has required a good faith effort to find a job in order to get wage loss. where he's temporarily totally disabled, he can't make a good faith effort to get away, so he wants to find another job. He's not able to work. And that needs to be understood. The other thing I think needs to be understood a bit is that there used to be some restrictions on temporary total. There were at one time time restrictions. Once you went 6 years past the date of injury, no more temporary total. That was eliminated by the legislature. They changed it to 10 years. Once you went 10 years past the date of injury, you were not entitled to temporary total. That was eliminated. There used to be dollar amount restrictions. The dollar amount restrictions have been eliminated. And what you have done, I think unwittingly, is to create a restriction that is not provided by the legislature, a restriction that says, if you leave this job, you're done. You don't get temporary total, even though, as a practical matter, you are temporarily totally disabled.
When we did that, though, weren't we, Mr. Jaffe, weren't we just following the two-prong test that's set forth in McGraw? The second prong of that test requires that your injury be the reason.
The second prong makes absolutely no sense to me.
Okay.
The first prong says...
We said it nevertheless, right?
You may have said it, but I'm going to explain to you that it has no relationship, one, to the statute. This whole argument has been, people, look, you've got a statute. The statute doesn't have any of this in it. How is it that you're able to do this so-called interpretation, if it's interpretation, how are you able to read into the legislation something that isn't there? How can you read it in when the legislature itself has removed restrictions on temporary total? How can you put this in? And I say, one, that doesn't make any sense to me, and two, not that it has to make sense to me, it's got to make sense to you, but two, you've got a situation here where under prong one, you admit this person is physically unable to do the work. And then you say, well, gee, person quit his job. That must mean it's something he did himself, and therefore that precludes him from returning to the job.
Right.
Return to the job, the specific job, is not a requirement that's spelled out in the statute. So now you've got two things going. One, you've got a guy who can't work, and that's keeping him from working that injury. And you also, he's quit the job. And so you say, we're going to ignore what is the real test. The test is a physical test. We're going to ignore that test because the guy quit the job. But the legislature didn't do that. Yes, ma'am.
We struggle a lot with the person that quit the job and goes and starts his own business. How would we write this forward, as you propose, to fit that scenario if someone starts a business and it may not be doing well, it may be very, very different from the job they left, but they're still trying to work?
There are some people who mistakenly believe that all you do is go down to Industrial Commissioner of the Bureau, apply for temporary total, and you proceed. That's not so. This person that you're describing, for example, has a hurdle. That hurdle is he's got to prove he is physically incapacitated. In all likelihood, he will be examined by a Bureau doctor. He may well also be examined by an employer doctor. There will be medical information, there will be hearings, and a hearing officer will make a decision. That essentially is what would happen in the scenario that you decided. I wanted to comment that the legislature also did a couple of other things, if you will. In point 54, they have put in a provision that excludes compensation for the person who is incarcerated. So the incarceration problem is not a problem because the statute is taking care of the incarceration problem. The legislature also, in point 56D, had put in a provision that would permit a reduction of the amount of temporary total where the individual is receiving Social Security retirement. I think all of these things are indications that the legislature was removing restrictions, and you've done the opposite. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.